Hello, Buzzkillers. You've always wanted to be a patron of the arts, haven't you? Well, now you can. Become a patron of Professor Buzzkill by clicking on the Patreon link at ProfessorBuzzkill.com. There are many levels of monthly pledges starting at only a dollar. And here's what you'll get in return. A warm feeling inside, the thanks of a grateful professor, shout-outs on the blog and podcast, coffee cups and t-shirts, and much, much more. But the most important thing is knowing that you'll be helping bring enlightenment to humanity. Thanks, Buzzkillers. Now here comes that music.
Ladies and gentlemen, the sound you hear is a buzzsaw ripping through a painting of George Washington chopping down cherry trees. It's time for Professor Buzzkill, busting myths and taking names.
Hello, Buzzkillers. It's the professor here. This week we're going to talk about Amazing Grace. You know Amazing Grace? It was a hymn published by the Anglican clergyman John Newton in 1779, and it's one of the most popular selections in the Christian songbook. In fact, it's one of the most recognizable songs in the world. By one reasonably reliable account that I have, it's sung over 10 million times annually. 10 million. There was a Broadway musical named Amazing Grace in 2015, that was loosely based on John Newton's life, and a character based on Newton appears in the 2006 film, also entitled Amazing Grace, about the inspiration for the abolition of the slave trade in the late 18th and early 19th centuries. But Buzzkillers, you know we wouldn't do a show if it hadn't also been for the fact that the hymn has also been the font of historical myths and misunderstandings. One particularly dramatic one, and one that's been flying around the internet for over a decade, is that the author, John Newton, had a Christian conversion after surviving a devastating storm that almost wrecked his ship. His ship? You just said he was an Anglican clergyman, Professor. Well, yes. John Newton did have a second career as a member of the clergy, but his first career was a member of a very, very different type of profession. John Newton was a slave trader. Now, the myth is, while being saved from this storm, Newton had a flash of inspiration that the slave trade was evil. The stories that the words to Amazing Grace came to him during the time he was being delivered from the storm and the ravages of the storm. He turned his ship around right then and there, stopped slave trading, and went back to England to join the church and fight for the abolition of the slave trade. That's the story. And like all these stories, Buzzkillers, it's too good to be true. Here's what actually happened. Newton was born in 1725 into a shipmaking and seafaring family. Now, as a young man, he took long trading voyages with his father. He later worked on merchant vessels, and between 1744 and 1748, he worked on at least two major slave ships, including one called the Pegasus. Apparently, he wasn't the best of shipmates because the crew of the Pegasus abandoned him in West Africa, and he was captured and enslaved by the local Sherbo peoples. He was later rescued by a British merchant ship in 1748, and they sailed back to England. This is the ship, the rescue ship, that got caught in the very violent storm that we were talking about. It got nearly wrecked off the coast of Ireland, and Newton and his crew barely survived, mostly by luck. But Newton attributed his survival to Providence, and he became a committed Christian. Arriving back in Liverpool in late 1748, he then hired onto another slave ship called the Brownlow, and returned to West Africa to continue slaving. He kept slaving until 1754, becoming a captain of two major slave ships in the 1750s. His faith didn't stop his slave trading career. A stroke did. Now, after leaving the sea because of the stroke, he became a customs officer in Liverpool and continued to be involved in the slave trade. What he did was he invested some of his savings in slave trading companies throughout the 1750s and early 1760. But also while he was in Liverpool, his faith apparently deepened. He attended different churches and eventually studied for the Anglican priesthood and was ordained in 1764. He was given a parish in the little town of Olney in Lincolnshire in the north of England and started his clerical life there. In 1767, the famous English poet William Cowper moved to Olney and became a member of Newton's church. They became friends and over the next few years began to write hymns together. These were published later as the Olney Hymns. In 1779. This proved to be a very, very influential hymn book, and many of these hymns became very popular, including one of them that Newton had written in 1772 called Face, Review, and Expectation. That hymn is better known by its opening phrase, Amazing Grace. It wasn't until 1780, many years later, that Newton began to reconsider the morality of the slave trade, and especially, frankly, the part he had taken in it. This was 8 years after he'd written Amazing Grace, and 32 years after the famous storm that nearly killed him and started him on his path to faith. In 1785, he began to speak out against the slave trade, and he lived to see the slave trade abolished in the British Empire by an act of Parliament on the 25th of March, 1807. And, if you will, fittingly, he died at the end of that year. But, buzzkillers, there's absolutely no evidence for the story that a nearly drowned John Newton scribbled the words to Amazing Grace on the deck of his almost wrecked slave ship, that he found new faith and it caused him to end his slaving right then and there, and that he started fighting for the abolition of slavery the moment he got home. None of that happened. It took a lot longer for him to see the light, if you will. But what happened to the hymn? Well, Amazing Grace was well on its way to obscurity in the early years after Newton's death. It was just one of a large number of published hymns. When they were sung, different tunes were applied to hymns by different clergy or different choir masters in different parishes at different times. So there was no memorable melody always connected to the words to Amazing Grace. But from what we can tell, one of the earliest tunes used for Amazing Grace was called Hephzibah, written by John Jacob's husband in the early 1800s. Here's what it sounded like.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saves a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see. I am bound for the promised land. I am bound for the promised land. My Savior calls me.
A couple of important things happen that help make Amazing Grace so popular. The first is something called the Second Great Revival. Now, there had been a First Great Revival, but we'll get to that in a different show. The Second Great Revival was a religious movement that stressed emotion, stressed singing, stressed charismatic preaching, and it became very, very influential in the early 19th century in the United States. One of the most musically innovative things about the Second Great Revival was the development of something called shape note singing. It's a little bit complicated, buzzkillers, and you have to picture this in your mind. Shape note transcription involved adding different shapes, triangles, squares, circles even, to the note heads in a melody. You know, a melody on a staff of music, right? Apparently, if read the right way and taught the right way, this helped groups sing together and help get the harmonies right. It was also easy to learn shape note singing. You didn't have to study music for a long time to, you know, to pick up on it. And it became a very popular technique. Partly because of shape note singing, hymn singing in general in churches and in services became very, very popular, exploded in popularity. Hymns became a much more important part of services. Now, the next thing to happen for Amazing Grace was that a South Carolinian Baptist song leader named William Walker put Newton's Amazing Grace hymn, the words, that is, to the traditional tune New Britain, the composer for New Britain. We don't know who that was. Walker does this in 1835, has it sung in his congregation for a few years, and then published it in 1847 in a hymn book called Southern Harmony. And in that hymn book, in Southern Harmony, he used shape notation. Now, Walker's book was a bestseller. It sold more than 600,000 copies, which was an enormous number back then, especially for a hymn book. And his musical version of Amazing Grace got lots of exposure. Here's what Walker's version of Amazing Grace, set to the tune of New Britain, would have sounded like at the time. Buzzkillers, these clips of early Amazing Grace tunes come from my new best buddy, Professor Mark Rhodes at Bethel University, and his students, of course, who are doing the singing. They provided the recordings, and they're allowing us to use them, so thanks for that, Mark. this is the version of Amazing Grace that you probably know it, and you know that it's very, very singable. It's a very easy melody. It's a very pretty melody. Because it was so easy to sing, because it was so easy to teach to a choir using shape note notation, the lyrics got a lot more, if you will, publicity and attention than they would have for some other sort of, you know, run-of-the-mill hymn, if you will. And from what we can tell from 19th century descriptions of how the song was received, the lyrics really touch people individually, and kind of at the same time, the song seemed to have a sort of special communal attraction. It brought people together and became the dominant hymn in Protestant America. It was even included in hymnals given to soldiers during the Civil War on both sides, and was often sang at soldiers' funerals. And it was translated into many, many languages using the New Britain tune. Some of those languages included some of the Native American ones, including Cherokee. Now, Amazing Grace remained somewhat popular into the 20th century, but it really got boosted by various folk song revivals from the 1920s to the 1960s. Mahalia Jackson, very, very famous singer, recorded a version in 1947 that was a huge hit, and she often sang it at concerts at Carnegie Hall and other major public occasions. Joan Baez even sang it at that great hippie fest Woodstock in 1969. What happened by the 60s and late 60s, certainly, is that Amazing Grace became both a, if you will, a standard American song and a counterculture American song. In fact, one of the things that Judy Collins thought about when she recorded her very, very famous 1970 version, massive hit, one of the things she thought about was the pity and the sorrow of the Vietnam War. Her record sold zillions, right? And that's the melody we're going to leave you with today. Talk to you next week, Buzzkillers.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to feed.
This is Aunt Ginger from Professor Buzzkill, and you're listening to the Epicast Network.
Epicast.